You're listening to Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3.
Hi there. Welcome to the Health Justice Radio Collective. My name is Nikki and on the board is Eric Brown. Every year, more than 27,000 migrant farm workers come to Canada. Today on the Health Justice Radio Collective, we focus in on the impact of precarious status on the health of migrant agricultural workers. We speak with Dr. Michael Pixklekwick, and he'll correct me on that, who co-authored a recently published article in the Canadian Medical Association Journal entitled Doctors Within Borders, Meeting the Healthcare Needs of Migrant Farm Workers in Canada. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Nikki.
Great to speak with you today. So I want to get right down into the issue. On the surface, it seems that temporary agricultural workers do have health coverage and that they're covered under Canadian health care. Can you tell me about what their access to health care is actually like?
Just to clarify the first point, most of them have coverage. And in fact, they all should have to some degree, but it's rather complicated how they get that. Depending on the program they're in, some have it right away and they literally get their health cards almost off the plane or some equivalent to it. But some actually don't get that or formal provincial coverage. It's more like insurance coverage that they have initially.
Mm-hmm.
But they all have something of some sort. What is their coverage actually like? Well, as you can imagine, they encounter a lot of barriers in accessing health care. So despite the fact that they have these cards, a lot of them don't even know what it's about. It's interesting, when we hold the clinic, we ask them, you know, do you have your health card? They don't know which one it is. They don't, in fact, know what that card is for, and they often reproduce their drug benefit coverage card or some other equivalent. So essentially, there's no explanation as to what the health care system is, as far as we can tell, and if there is, they don't get that message. That's really the first barrier. They don't really understand what our health system is about or how to access it or get it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
They do, of course. Language is really probably the main barrier, and they don't feel comfortable going to clinics where they have difficulty making themselves understood.
Mm-hmm. So if I understand correctly, in Ontario, right from the moment they step onto Canadian soil, they are covered by OHIP in general.
In general, that's true, yeah. You know, we go over all the nuances of it. There are various programs they go in, but the large majority in Ontario are covered by OHIP and by WSIB,
Okay. Which
is particularly relevant. Of course, they're here for their work, and in general, they're rather young, healthy people. So a lot of the health issues that they encounter are actually work-related, so it actually falls under the WSIB umbrella regarding coverage.
And so what are some other barriers? You mentioned language and maybe not knowing what their health card is. Other barriers that they face?
Probably some of the major ones are just sort of the social circumstances that they are in here, or occupational circumstances. They're here to work, and if they're not working, they're not in a job, and in fact, trigger repatriation. So another large barrier is just practically getting to the hospital or clinic services, I should say. So if they're looking for health care outside of typical work hours, it's almost impossible to find short of going to an emergency. They simply can't go to a family doctor's office between 9 to 5 or even a walk-in clinic at sort of practical hours because they're out working in the field. Typically 10, 12-hour days. And secondly, they don't have the transportation to get into the city short of typically bicycles.
Okay.
So that's often the issue, often a big issue as well. They just can't get into the services that are there, and it usually falls on the hospital to provide that, the emergency department in particular.
Mm-hmm. And so you, even though there are these barriers, you do see migrant workers. So can you tell me under what setting that takes place?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've tried to address a few of those barriers, language being one, the availability being the other. And what we've done through our clinics, that's the Occupational Health Clinics for Ontario Workers, we've set up every other week, we set up clinics in the communities on a Friday night when they're typically in town, or some other night when they're in town,
mm-hmm.
and we have translators there available and sort of an opening and welcome environment for them. And someplace geographically where they typically are, it's interesting because the prime time for these guys being in town is either the Friday nights or Sunday during the day when they need to either do all their shopping or they go to church. So we're trying to hit those targets at the time that they congregate in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And geographically being in the sort of the avenues or the streets where they'll come across us. So we sort of set out our shingle in those areas to try and address that.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the services that you are providing, I guess, covered by OHIP then?
Indirectly, they're covered by WSIB.
Okay.
Our clinic is a not-for-profit clinic that's funded through WSIB, through the prevention services.
Okay.
And the clinic essentially pays me as well as the other clinic staff to be there.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of volunteers coming out as well, I should say, and they're a really important part of what we do, both in just organizing and making sure it works and helping translate at the clinics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really neat experience. It's just sort of, it's not something we thoughtfully went out and did, to be frank. It's sort of evolved over the years. We started out quite small, and we're just doing these experimental clinics in the Niagara region, actually, initially. And we just went out once or twice and booked a few clinic appointments. But over the years, it became apparent to some of the barriers they faced. And we thought, well, we can address these in certain ways. And they expanded it beyond this sort of experimental clinic to a service or observational type of thing.
Mm-hmm. And when you see patients, what kind of things are you seeing in terms of health conditions?
We specifically solicit occupational conditions because that is what we're paid to do. So we ask them to come just with occupational issues, so it skews the sample a little bit of what their health issues are. The kinds of things we see at our clinic are what you might expect of people that do farm work for long hours or long periods, and that's a lot of MSK issues.
Mm-hmm.
So back, neck, shoulders, knees. And typically those are repetitive strain injuries. We're not seeing so much in the way of acute injuries because those probably get triaged to the hospital or whatever if something immediate happens, such as a fracture or a specifically acute injury.
Mm-hmm.
And so beyond the MSK sort of things, the other things we see commonly are ocular issues. So conjunctivitis, just eye irritation, eye damage from the sun. And as well, we see a lot of dermatitis, skin issues from, again, irritation in the fields, but as well pesticides that they might be exposed to and other contacts.
Okay.
The interesting thing is we get this sort of umbrella effect. We ask them just to come with occupational issues, but we end up seeing a lot of non-occupational stuff, which makes the clinics interesting. It becomes apparent that they don't have too much ability to access healthcare otherwise, so they gravitate to our clinics because we're there and we're providing services. So we end up getting almost everything. And that's when you see the spillover. And incidentally, we see a lot of sexually transmitted diseases, a lot of gastrointestinal issues, which I think somewhat is a cultural thing. There's a lot of sort of vague abdominal pains or abdominal focus, depending on the culture that's in that particular area.
And in your article, there's talk about migrants being afraid that their employers will end their term of employment or that they'll be deported if they know they have a health condition. How much of that do you see?
We try not to explore that too much because we don't want to be too threatening, but it becomes apparent sort of peripherally or subconsciously. They're, like a lot of disadvantaged workers, their employment depends on their health. So there's, again, the fear of repatriation if they're not able to function fully as workers. And whether that's true or not, it all depends on their circumstances and the farmer. I don't have a lot of personal experience with that happening, and I don't want to paint the farmers with a bad brush because, quite frankly, I think people are there for the same reason and the right reason, that is to keep them employed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just naturally happens that if their health predicates whether they work, then the farmer or the workers will go to some lengths to hide any injuries or illnesses that they may have. And secondly, if they aren't functioning at 100%, then they're not useful to the farmer.
Mm-hmm. And have any ethical concerns come up where you've been asked not to inform the employer or anything like that?
Yeah, we get asked that a lot. We actually, it's kind of an interesting relationship we have with the workers. We try not to, we try and establish a bit of a relationship of trust with these guys. And so we don't push the WSIB issue too much. Because we're essentially providing free service and we are being funded by the WSIB, I don't have to, or I'm not ethically committed to file a claim in most circumstances, that being sort of the repetitive strain injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard anecdotally through Emerge, through some of the qualitative research work that we have done, that workers have requested that things not be submitted and that things not be reported to the WSIB or whatever the case might be.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm sort of dancing around it because
right.
We don't exactly have the same requirement to report those type of things.
Okay. So what happens if a worker does sustain an injury that does prevent them from continuing to work?
What should happen is what would happen to any other worker in Canada. That is, if they truly can't work and they're disabled, they should be off work and they should be paid by WSIB. The repatriation process should not kick in, but it often does, and it's somewhat of a gray area. The people that control the repatriation process are the consulates for whatever country this person might be coming from. And so the process will often get initiated and they can get sent home in certain circumstances. But that doesn't always happen. And oftentimes, and what should happen is, again, as with any other workers, they should stay here, be off work until they're well and integrated back into the workplace through modified work from back to regular work.
Okay.
There's a little bit of, it's quite a gray area as to when WSIB responsibility ends and the person's home healthcare system begins. And, you know, as you can imagine, a lot of these issues are perpetuating. So the worker can go home with some sort of injury. And ideally, WSIB would be covering all the incidental costs subsequently because the injury is wholly related to the work, but oftentimes mm-hmm. that's not the case because, as you can imagine, WSIB doesn't have an office down in Jamaica or Mexico or whatever the circumstance is.
Mm-hmm. So if someone, for example, sustains an injury, an MSK injury that might cause chronic pain and need long-term rehabilitation, it sounds like there's kind of a gap in terms of who would pay for that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a perfect case. It's really problematic. And I don't know if the profession of physiatry, for instance, even exists in Mexico, and it certainly is unlikely to exist in the rural areas where a lot of these workers might be from. So the chance of that person getting rehabilitated is really slim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more, as you can imagine, for the more obvious issues where it's probably not a problem. If the worker fractures his leg here, for instance, typically that process would happen as it normally would with the care occurring here and subsequent care being looked after. It's a more nebulous one, such as the repetitive strain injury of the back, where attribution of causation, you know, isn't as clear-cut or completely on WSIB that the wheels fall off a little bit as far as the system goes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm sort of talking around this because we don't know a lot of these answers, and we're in fact pursuing some research just to see what happens, what the process of the claims are, and how they work subsequently, and
mm-hmm.
doing qualitative work to see what happens with the more complicated issues as they go back to their home country and follow some of the claims through. So it'll be interesting to see.
Okay. So just quickly, at the end of the article, you make some recommendations, both for healthcare providers and for more systemic issues. Can you tell me about some of those?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing is just awareness of this population. Understand that the issues and barriers that they face, particularly healthcare providers, need to be aware of what this population is about. and what some of the best approaches are. And it's hard to problem solve because there's so many different health care delivery systems that are used throughout the province or in the different communities. I think probably the biggest thing you can use, and most people recognize this, is translators.
Mm-hmm.
To have a quick and accessible translation service in most places. As well, it's just showing the worker that there was time spent in communication, as with any worker, whether it be a foreign worker or otherwise. It's just showing empathy for the worker and making them think or understand that you listen to their problem. And that's often challenging to do when they don't speak the language, so it's just spending the time. And in the research we've done, actually, I'm not sure that's so much the issue. I think doctors are actually very interested in this population, and in the work we've done, they seem to very much enjoy seeing these people.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
No, perhaps I should say, we often talk about the foreign workers, but this actually started as a bit of an experiment and is evolving beyond that. That these people are almost a window into a much bigger population, and that's people with precarious work, even in our country. There's a lot of people, whether that be temporary workers here in Canada, Canadian citizens.
Mm-hmm.
This exact information applies to you, maybe not so much language, but precarious work is a really big social problem in Canada, not just for foreign workers, but for Canadians as well.
Mm-hmm. And that's a population you see in Hamilton, is that correct?
We see them somewhat. It's a hard population to access because they're not sort of a captive group. And why we chose this was it's quite that they are captive, and it's quite obvious who they are, and they're easier to study. But we would love to be able to get a better picture of the health issues of all precarious workers, beyond the foreign workers as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we see it a little bit in Hamilton, but it's hard to tap into beyond sort of the individual patient experience, which is what we spend a lot of time at our clinic doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, and we'll link to your article on our website.
Oh, that's great.
Great. Have a good day.
Okay. Thank you.